Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Focus Fire podcast. I'm Alan. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff Dirtypool.
Hi, guys.
And once again, Focus Fire is a semi-regular competitive 40K podcast aimed at providing you focused and practical advice that you can actually use to improve your game. This podcast is brought to you through TFG Radio Network, one of the fine products from the TFG Radio family. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at focusedfirepodcast@gmail.com. And this is episode number 11. We skipped 2 weeks ago. You were in Detroit, I guess, the Motor City Madman here.
Yeah, that's right. Dirtypool getting dirty in Detroit. All right.
I was up in Salt Lake City, watched a little BYU-USC football, and just hung out there. So we're out of town, but the boys are back in town. And tonight, we're going to have three topics for you. First one is going to be durability in the late game. Number two is a controversial topic, tickbacks and tournament etiquette. Number three is practical applications. We're going to talk about some of the games we've played this week and anticipated changes to the meta. Because I don't know if you've been paying attention, Jeff, but nope. There's been some changes apparently to 40K. I haven't been keeping up on them either, but I hear some people talking about it, so it'll be interesting.
I'm excited to hear about it.
So topic number one, let's start us off, Jeff, with durability and the late game.
So this is kind of just a more of a note about some of the trends we've been seeing in the competitive scene at kind of the higher tiers of play. And, you know, the common list archetypes out there, they have a game plan where they're essentially just trying to destroy their opponent in the first couple of turns. They want to alpha strike their opponent, remove their pieces that can threaten their army, and deliver such a sucker punch or a knockout blow to the opposing army that by turn three or four, there's nothing left for the opponent to fight back with. And that's been, you know, that especially in the beginning of the edition, was a really successful way to go about building a competitive tournament list. But
the famous alpha strike lists.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is the Gilliman gun line with a bajillion shots and full rerolls that just picks you up off the table. And we're starting to see that kind of emerge again with Space Marines, which we can get into later. But there's been a growing trend of armies that are focused on durability, and they prize durable units and durable synergistic abilities within their army more than the alpha strike or pure damage. And these lists have been doing very well. They're not trying to table their opponent by turn three, but instead are trying to spread the amount of damage that army would do over two or three turns into six turns. So they're trying to, they take all that damage and they kind of prolong it over the entire game instead of having it focused in a few turns. And the prime example of this is Jim Vessel's list, actually, his 60 Plague Bearers who, you know, get buffed up with minus two to hit, and they can have a four up invulnerable save, they have a five up feel no pain, and they essentially screen this core of casters, Demon Princes, Ahriman, who shoot out smites over the course of the game. And, you know, while in one turn they might not delete a knight or devastate their opponent, what they'll do is over the course of six turns, when you're casting four smites a turn, you know, your 24 smites is a lot of mortal wounds that you're going to be kicking out throughout the course of the game. And the focus of this army is on board control. It's the Plague Bearers move out, they kind of spider out, and they hold objectives. They're going to get some kills. They may not get killed more every turn, but they're going to deny you kills because getting through those 30 Plague Bearers is a real chore. The list doesn't lose its durability or its effectiveness until all the Plague Bearers are dead. And so, you know, the archetype is, as I just said, let's hold the board, be durable, last till the end of the game, and then when your opponent has, you know, doesn't have much left at the end of the game, you still have your core of casters and demon princes and stuff like that to go out and pick up whatever's left. Another example of this, which is Richard Siegler's Nova list, his Tau list, which is kind of works on the same concept. He has all these drones. He has 40-ish, 50-ish drones in his list, and they protect his Riptides from incoming damage, anti-tank damage mainly, because if you're shooting bolters at the Riptides, the Riptide just takes his two up armor save, doesn't give a shit. But if you're shooting las cannons, the drones are going to be taking those wounds for them. And most of the time, the drones are able to be hid behind line of sight, so you can't even shoot them. And even if you can shoot them, getting through shield drones is a chore. I mean, they are like a plague bearer. They have a 4-up invulnerable save, a 5-up feel no pain. So, you know, he doesn't have 60 plague bearers, but he has 40 or 50 plague bearers, essentially, who can also act to take hits for the Riptides. And the Riptides themselves, you know, they're strength 6. They have the burst cannons and whatnot, and they don't, they're not like a broadside. Like, even the 3 broadsides will delete a knight in one round of shooting with the stratagem to reroll wounds. And especially if you have the +1 to wound stratagem. But a Riptide, even with 3 Riptides shooting at a knight with 5 marker lights on it, you may not kill the knight. But what you'll do is you'll do 18 wounds to it instead of 24, and then you'll pick it up next turn. So this, the, it kind of operates on the same concept as the Gem Vessel Plague Bearer list, where you're just, you have durable battle suits that can last until turn 6, and on turn 6 they've done so much damage to the opposing army by that time and have taken relatively little damage in exchange that they are going to be poised to win the game on turns 5 and 6. And this is especially true with the commanders that Richard Siegler ran his list, which had the cyclic ion blasters and could just devastate anything that gets within 18 inches of those commanders. So you know, Richard Siegler has been on a couple of podcasts describing his Tau list that he won Nova with, and he kind of goes over exactly that. And if you compare the two on a conceptual level, the Tau list is very similar to the Gem Vessel list. It's just durability, last till turn 5 and 6, and then by the time you get there, you have been able to do enough damage to your opponent so that they don't have the tools or the resources to deal with what you still have left at the time in the game.
Yeah, I talked to Richard Siegler at the BAO. He was my only loss, and I saw his list. I go, oh, that's interesting. I don't really know how it worked, but I saw all these drones and the suits. It's like, it doesn't really have broadsides. I go, he's got Riptides, you know, but I wonder where all the killie comes from. And he doesn't really have that much killie, but what happens is he has the broadsides, and he takes like twice as many drones as almost everybody else takes.
Oh, you say he doesn't have broadsides.
He doesn't have broadsides. Yeah, yeah. He says the reason why is because you can just run up there with something you can like ignore Overwatch and just touch them, and then that just shuts down this all how many points those are. So he just doubles down in the amount of drones he has, and this has two effects. First of all, it takes forever to kill these drones, because I was playing them, I was using smites, and I was just going crazy, and let me tell you, a 4-up with a 5-up field no pain, it did take, and a 4, toughness 4 actually really helps them too, but it takes forever to wade through those stupid drones, because even if I was smiting him, he was making all these stupid feel-no-pain saves, and I just wasn't getting any kills off of him. Even, he takes like these small little two-man squads of drones too, and I'm just trying to hammer these two-man drone squads with all this firepower, and I just couldn't kill him. It was just, I just struggled to do it, and he did really well. He Moncot, what's the one movement? Moncot or Kaon?
Moncot is the movement.
He's a really good player. He moved so that he was able, moved his Riptide so he was able to shoot Ahriman and my Demon Prince. And once he took those two off, I lost all my buffs. Because with my buffs, I was thinking about hitting him, fully buffed up Magnus, going into his lines like a wrecking ball and seeing if he could do it. Also, I could put down my Horrors and they can take the Overwatch and go in, but His list is really good, and the thing about Jim Vessel's list, he has the Thousand Sun Supreme Command detachment protected by the character rule. So Jim Vessel's list and Richard Siegler's list, they don't lose any firepower as the game goes on, because Richard's list is still functioning, still doing great as long as he has drones, because the drones are taking all the wounds off of him. And so he's not losing any Riptides and he's not losing any suits. So he just keeps on going and going and going. And, you know, and with Jim Vessel, the same thing. He's got the Supreme Command detachments protected by all these plague bearers. So he's still operating at full capacity until you can get to those. Yeah. And the thing about that is most armies, you know, if you kill like a Leman Russ or if you kill a knight, as you just mentioned, if you kill, you know, like a Hive Tyrant or kill whatever, you know, you're slowly grinding an army down, you're losing its ability to fight back. And that's basically the way most armies work, is they go, they give and take, you know, and both sides lose things and grind each other down. But these armies work, you know, they don't get ground down. They're shooting the same on turn four as they did on turn one. And that's a tremendous amount of firepower. So oftentimes when you look at a matchup or something like that, you see like turns one, two, and three, they're actually not doing too well, you know. They don't really have board control usually. You know, they're on their back foot, you know, and they're behind in points, but you know, they have the firepower and they keep on going, and turn four, five, and six is when they really shine.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one thing we can do later when we kind of discuss the meta changes, but the kind of the Iron Hand specter or that's looming out there, these Leviathan Dreadnoughts that take a Warhound or whatever, Warlord Titan to kill or whatever it is. You know, the thing with the Richard Siegler, Jim Vessel list is they have board presence. They have board control because they have 60 Plague Bearers, 50 Drones. They have a lot of stuff. Iron Hands, to me, don't have that same... like, these vehicles surrounded with the minus one to hit or minus one damage bubble and the feel no pain and the ability to heal it up, you're unlikely to kill those vehicles. And they'll be pumping out a ton of wounds over the course of the game. But what they don't have is the ability to control where you shoot. So if the Iron Hand player is holding objective with infantry models, Primaris infantry or whatever, what's going to end up happening is the opponent will go, okay, well, I'm just going to kill those and I'll hold the objectives and play the mission, you know, to hopefully deny him some secondaries. I'll get all my secondaries. He'll get kill more. I'll get hold more and I'll win because I got more secondaries than him. And, you know, if you get lucky, maybe you can kill one of these vehicles in a turn or two, you know. But with the ability to heal so much, you kind of have to drop it in one turn. Otherwise, they'll heal it six to nine wounds, and you're just kind of back where you started. So
yeah, it's so hard to do wounds to these to those models. And then if once you the stuff you do get through, they'll just heal up. So
yeah, and so I mean, it's at that point where you just have to kind of accept that, look, I can't kill this thing necessarily, but I just need to identify a different win condition and play to the mission. And I just wanted to contrast that durability with the lack of not board control, but the lack of ability to control where your opponent shoots, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Because to invest this, you have to shoot the Plague Bearers. That's all there is, unless he brings in his horrors and stuff like that. But those are, you know, equally as annoying. And with Richard Siegler, his drones are either going to be out of line of sight or, you know, they're really tough to get through because they have their own invulnerable save. So he's forcing you either to shoot at the drones, which you don't want to shoot at necessarily with your anti-tank, or shoot the Riptides, which you don't want to shoot at with your anti-tank because he has drones. So it's kind of, they control what you shoot at, and to the extent the Iron Hand player does as well, because he's saying essentially you can't shoot at this, so you have to shoot at everything else. But because of that, you're able to take away his ability to control the board, if you will. So, you know, I think that's something to kind of contrast there.
Yeah, we're going to see the Iron Hands. They basically castle up and have a lot of shooting, and they're extremely durable, but I don't know if they have that much board presence because they're going to spend a lot of points on vehicles. And
yeah, they're going to have 1,500 points in Executioners or Repulsors and 200 points in characters backing them up, so you're going to have only a couple hundred points to walk around and do things.
Yeah, so they're going to only have a few infantry, so if you can stay alive, hopefully, you know, and this is how it greatly depends on tournaments, too. It's like, if you have a lot of line-of-sight blocking terrain, it's one thing, and if you don't, you're going to be in a world of hurt, especially if you have, like, the famous magic boxes. If you have the magic boxes where the dreadnoughts or nothing can get into and can't shoot at you, then...
Yeah, then you'll be in a lot better of a position. And so speaking of tournaments... Why don't you move us on to our second topic?
Let's talk about takebacks and tournament etiquette. What is a takeback? A takeback is basically at a tournament. Let's say you're in a phase and you forget to do something, and let's say you're in the assault phase and you forgot to charge one unit. Let's say you go on to like you're into the shooting phase and you forgot to use psychic powers or whatever. The question is, you know, can you go back and do a do-over and say to your opponent, hey, you know, is it okay if I just go ahead and shoot this unit quickly, even though we're starting the assault phase? You know, so a lot of times it's just basically mistakes are made, and the question is, you know, should you allow your opponent to take kickbacks. And we've seen this a lot. This has started to become a big discussion on board, because now that almost all tournaments are being streamed, especially finals of like these gigantic tournaments, you see people who do kickbacks, and it's like, hey, is it okay if I do this? And your opponent will either be okay or not. And so, you know, sometimes it'll also create feel bad one way or another, depending on what the answer is. So what's your thoughts on this, Jeff?
Well, you know, I just kind of want to note that Warhammer 40K and Warhammer General has a kind of a unique culture of takebacks. I mean, like, I don't play competitive chess or competitive Magic the Gathering, but I play Magic the Gathering. I do play chess, and I can tell you right now, if you forget to cast a spell or you forget to attack and you've gone on to your second main phase in Magic the Gathering, and your opponent is not going to let you take anything back. They're going to go, tough shit.
Or if you take your finger off your chess piece, you
just move. Exactly. And so 40K, because it's a kind of a, it's a more social game. It's a game where you're, it's a game that's derived both in a casual sense, because it, I mean, 40K has, at least to me, it started off as a casual game and then I became a competitive player. But it's, it has this kind of casual investiture in it. And so just know that people in Warhammer 40K have, there's a culture of allowing takebacks. And so you have to kind of always be forthright with your opponent about how you want to play the game at the beginning. And this goes to a lot of things. You know, at the start of every game, you want to have a frank conversation with your opponent. You want to say, I want to have takebacks. I'd like two, please. Or, look, I don't want any takebacks from you. I would like it if you would please not ask me for any in return. You just want to have that conversation before the game starts, so that you're not having it at a time when it actually matters and there's, you know, you have a larger chance for a feel bad. If your opponent at the beginning of the game says, oh, geez, I don't want to play that seriously, you can just say, well, okay, you don't have to allow takebacks. So you can stick to your gun and say, look, that's fine. I don't want to make you have a bad time, but I don't also want to have a bad time myself. And for me, this is a game, and it's a competitive game I would like to win, and I don't want to promote go-backs or take-backs, so no thank you. And you got to be willing to just take that stance and stick to your guns about it. I don't feel bad about it personally, because it's just part of the social contract that you need to enter into with your opponent.
Yeah, I think it's because of the roots of our game. You know, it's basically an English game, and kind of they have a gentlemanly spirit of, you know, kind of helping each other out. And it was basically, it started off as a beer and pretzels game, you know, and we kind of turned it into a competitive game. It used to be just like a fun game. And so when you turn a fun game into a competitive game, you're going to have these kind of issues that arise. And I kind of want us, as far as take back goes, I want to have no take backs in my game. No quarter asked, no quarter given. And if you notice, with my game at Slaughterfest that was being streamed, I was playing against a Necron player, and I used my Razorwing Jet Fighters to basically shoot all his Tomb Blades off the table, and he was down to two, and I moved my Harlequin Solitaire up to then assault them after I got done shooting at him. And I completely forgot to move my Solitaire into assault, so he's sitting there with his pants down around his ankle. And not only that, but he was allowed the Tomb Blades then to use resurrection protocols to get some back. And I didn't ask for a take back. If I ever make a mistake in the game, usually I don't go back. I just like, well, that's on me. I screwed up. But if I do allow take backs in a game, that gives my opponent a huge advantage, because if he's allowed to take backs and if he's allowed to overcome some mistakes, That puts me at a huge advantage, because I don't have the same opportunity. So I prefer, in a perfect world, I prefer to play in hardcore mode. Basically, no takebacks. No, if you make a mistake, you make a mistake, and we have to deal with it and move on.
Yeah, and I think that's something that you should also do in your practice games. That's what I try and do, to the extent possible. Unless I'm practicing a new list or something with a new faction, I don't know the rules, I'll tell my opponent, like in a league game or a practice game, hey, I'm just practicing, I'm still getting used to the army, you know, just go take it easy with me here as I kind of like learn what my stratagems and spells do, you know, that kind of shit, you know. Or if you're running an army for your buddy to practice against and you're running an army you don't normally run, then obviously, you know, it's a different situation. But at a tournament, I agree.
Yeah, tournaments almost all bets are off. You know, tournament, you're going there, you should know what you're doing, you should know your stuff, you should know your army, and mistakes happen. And it's basically, it is a hardcore mode. Well, it's if you're just a friend in a league game or just playing at night, just having a good time, then it's like, I don't really care. It's like, you know, whatever happens, happens. You know, if you want to take back, fine, sure, I don't, it doesn't matter, but... Yeah, I definitely have a different attitude with tournaments. But it's just one of those things you have to communicate with your opponent before the game and tell them so that, you know, you know what you're operating with, and you know that you won't be allowing any take back, so don't ask. And if you forget, you forget. And sorry, but, you know, you're operating under the same agreement, basically, that you won't do any take backs either.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us about some games you played, Alan?
Games played. I haven't played much because I've been out of town, but I played last night versus Ultramarines. The famous Tom.
Little Butters
from TFG Radio podcast fame.
A little family feud.
Played as Alpha Legion Ultramarines. So, wanted to see what the new Space Marines could do, and I kind of found out. They have a lot of tricks, but, you know, Eldar are tricky. So I basically took my Slaughterfest list, except basically an Eldari with two Farseer Warlock, two Rangers, and a Storm Guardian. I added basically 8 Shining Spears. I know everyone's like, oh, Shining Spears suck. They're no longer any good. But I actually kind of like Shining Spears, you know. You can buff them up with the Warlock and the Farseer. You know, they get the 3-up, 4-up save. They move fast. They can quicken, you know, and they hit hard. I have a lot of trouble dealing with things with high toughness. Like anything toughness 5, Harlequins really struggle with. And in a combination of Doom and a bunch of Strength 6, AP minus 4 weaponry, and Jinx, that might help me out a little bit. So, and then I took 3 Razorwing Jet Fighters, and I also took my Harlequins, basically. I decided to add a whole bunch. I took a Shadow Seer, a Solitaire, and just a whole bunch of Skyweaver jet bikes. Now that the Iron Hands, as we talked about a few minutes ago, are going to be a thing, I think we're going to see a lot of Space Marines and a lot of Space Marine vehicles. I think we're going to see a lot of Repressors, a lot of Iron Hands, and so I'm going to have to start packing in as many Skyweavers as I can fit in. So,
yeah, I think that's an accurate assessment.
Yeah, so we started, so he has a lot of vehicles. He has those 3, what are those open-top dreadnoughts now?
I have no idea.
What are those called? Come on, what? You're like,
The infiltrating dreadnoughts.
The infiltrating flavor open-top dreadnoughts.
Something
whatever,
that sounds
Latin. We're sure. Old.
So, newfangled dreadnoughts.
Yeah, you kids, back in my day, we
all had those. All I think about when I think about those is the meme or something I saw of one with a cowboy hat. And that's all I can think of when I think of these cowboy dreadnoughts.
So he had 3 of these infiltrating flavor dreadnoughts. He had 2 of these little storm talons, the little flyers. He had 2 Scorpius Forge World tanks with the Kronos in it.
The Whirlwinds?
Yeah, the Scorpius, basically. Oh, okay. The overpowered Forge World Whirlwind.
Yeah.
And he had a bunch of Eliminators and a bunch of Scouts and a bunch of, you know, whatever, Primaris crap. I don't know what's going on there.
So that's half of Space Marine's strength is no one knows what any of their shit is, right?
That's why Tau for the longest time. Now, Tau is only like a few units now, but back in the day, Tau used to be, what the hell is this? What the hell is that too? I don't know what any of this stuff is. It's like another language. But I played him, so he made a mistake and I made a mistake. I took recon behind enemy lines and old school, and that was kind of a mistake. That's my default when I'm tired and I'm lazy. That's what I do. Recon behind enemy lines and old school, because you can kind of get that, and you kind of can get that no matter what your opponent's army with, and that is a huge mistake. I should stop doing that, and I should really get away from that, because here's the problem. Whenever I take behind enemy lines, I have to be in their deployment zone. And whenever I fly one of my flyers in their deployment zone, some idiot with a jetpack comes screaming out of a building, waving his thunder hammer around, and smacks my plane down. And then, you know, or it's like I get a warp time demon print up my face. So, and then recon also means that you're going to be in their deployment zone. You're going to be a point blank to eat a bunch of smite. So one of the strengths of my army is my range. And when I take those secondaries, I lose that range advantage because it means I have to take recon, so I have to be in their deployment zone. And behind enemy lines means I got to be even farther, you know, I got to be in their board quarters. But behind enemy lines, I have to be even farther forward. Now, my planes, like, I should just stay back and relax and just shoot. But no, I go forward, I take that. And he made the same mistake. He took recon. Now, I prefer always to go second. And I didn't know if I should go second or first with that army, too, because I have no idea what's going on with him. I don't know what shenanigans he can play, but I kind of place one army of Skyweavers, a big squad of Skyweavers, right on my deployment zone, right on his right on deployment line, so that I can move him forward and attack with him if I go first or if I go second. This is two advantages. If I go first, I can then use what's it, Phantasm, where you move three Eldar units up.
Yeah.
So I can move my Shining Spears, my Farseer, my other units up just to, if I get turn one, so I can get them in position to prepare to attack. And the Harlequins have, I think it's 1,000 Swords of Vol or something like that. They also have the ability to use to move one unit. So I can use, so if I go first, I can move up. So I have one unit already up there. If I go first, I can move a second squad up, and if I go second, I can pull that squad back. So he unfortunately took the bait. When I put those Skyweavers right up there on that line, it was just too juicy of a target. So he basically infiltrated his those open top dreadnoughts to be right in front of me. And I was like, okay, fine, I'm out of here. So I pulled them back. Now I didn't realize Ultramarines have a lot of deployment shenanigans too, I was unaware of. So I guess his Warlord trait, he got to move some unit or so. He moved some Eliminators closer to me where they can get a shot at some of my characters, which I was not too pleased with. And he also, then he had the stratagem where he can redeploy, I guess, three units. Same thing as the Elder. I was like, whoa, no, nope, nope. So I had to vec that. And because I want him right where he is, because the Scorpiuses were out of range, and I want him just hanging out there in front of me with his pants down around his ankles. So he goes first turn. He can't really do much. He can't really kill much. He moved. He had recon. He took recon, so he had to move his flyers forward. Now, I guess his flyers are minus one to be hit additionally because from something that flies, and all my crap flies. So I'm minus two to shoot him. So I was like, fine. You want to be like that? Be like that. I'll just ignore you. So... So he came up, he shot my Storm Guardians. Says the Eldar player. So what I did was I just moved up all my Skyweaver jet bikes and I just unloaded. I basically quickened my Shining Spears so they were like point blank range because he moved his three dreadnoughts behind a building, but my Skyweavers were able to shoot two of his dreadnoughts on either side of the building. So I killed basically his two dreadnoughts. And then my Shining Spears basically killed the middle dreadnought. And then I was in a position because my Skyweavers shoot 24 inches. I moved my Skyweavers so they're right next to his flyers. And then I basically assaulted. I assaulted his flyers. Like, fine, you want to be like that? You want to be minus two to hit? Fine, I'll just assault you. How you like that now? So then basically I chewed up his flyers really bad in assault. He moved one out. He moved both of them out of assault. You want to talk about takebacks. So he flies 20 inches away. I was like, okay, I have a strategy. I can shoot after you leave combat. So here you go. Eat lead, sucker. He goes, oh, wait a minute. Let me move. I want to move 5 more inches. Like, oh, no, you moved it. So you said you were done. You said you moved it. So I was like, you know, you can't. After you play a strategy, I was like,
you're going to do something bad to me.
I know. Let me deep strike in front of you. Oh, you can shoot him? Let me deep strike behind this building. So it's like... Yeah. So basically, I killed one of his flyers, and then he's pretty much crippled. Then he shoots at me. He rolls kind of bad, and I roll kind of good, and that is a very bad combination. So He ends up, he kind of scattered. He tried to shoot a little bit of everything. You kind of want to get one kill a turn in ITC. He really needed to either kill my Shining Spears, my Sky. He shot a little bit here, he shot a little bit there. I don't know if he's trying to get out lightning fast reflexes, which I eventually did play, but wait until, you know, enough of his firepower is committed that he's going to struggle to kill a unit. And sure enough, he wasn't able to kill any units in his turn. And then my turn, I just started, my army was pretty much in full fighting force, and I was going to obliterate him turn two, and he pretty much called the game. But it was interesting to see a few of the techniques that the Marines have.
Just a lot of redeployment shenanigans.
Yeah, huh? They have. I like my Marines straight up, straightforward, you know, no shenanigans. That's the way the Marines were meant to be. And pulling shenanigans, that's an Eldar thing, and that's not very nice. But he took a bunch of Eliminators, and let me tell you, I guess they ignore line of sight. And also, if you can redeploy them even without that, but basically, he smoked my Shadow Seer turn one. I'm like, I do not like. I was like, I guess they ignore character and they ignore line of sight and all this other stuff.
Yeah, they have all kinds of ammunition. Some of their ammunition can shoot out of line of sight. Some of them, it's just like really good.
It's like if you're a character, you're going to be, especially with a redeploy, you're going to be in a world of hurt.
Yeah, that's a big reason I'm like not playing my orcs in this season, is mainly because I also want a break. But with orcs have so many squishy little characters, you know, one Vindicar was already a threat to the orc army, but now it's 9 Eliminators, 2 Phobos captains with their sniper rifles, and you know, all kinds of crazy shit to kill your characters. So if you can't hide them, you're gonna lose them, and the orcs don't have any invulnerable saves or anything like that to help protect them.
And characters are a very important part of everybody's army. They have, you know, the auras and buffs they provide. You start losing characters, you start losing a lot of your viability.
Well, speaking of losing characters, let me tell you about my experience with the Bash Bros, because I've been playing just for funsies in our local league. I've been playing Magnus and Mortarion, and I pair that with 60 Zang or 59 Zangors, of course, with both the Musician and the Brayhorn.
Yes.
The good cheese. By the time you hear this, perhaps it's not allowed anymore.
Yeah,
and the FAQ will probably come out.
No, the FAQ, but it's in that new book that they have, isn't it?
No.
They're supposed to invalidate all the
that Legends or whatever. Yeah. That's not going to happen until, I think, after LVO, I don't think.
Okay.
So I have 59 Zangors. I have Ahriman, 2 Demon Princes, and a Zangor Shaman, who is probably not the best choice, but I have the model, and he's... There he is, you know, it's nice.
I was like, what he kind of does, he's so specialized in his role.
You know, when I thought that they had Death of the False Emperor, he was a good addition to my army. Plus one hit, I mean, he does make them hit on twos.
A million extra wounds to you.
He does make me hit on twos, which is really nice, because then I still have the Demon Prince for real ones. So it does help, and he is a smite guy, so it's fine. I played a guy who's in our league who is running Eldari. He was kind of running an interesting Eldari list with, he had 9 Vibro Cannons, 3 Crimson Hunter Exarchs with Star Cannons, he had 3 Wave Serpents with Guardians in them, he had a Farseer, a Warlock, a Autark on bike, and 2 units of Swooping Ox. So kind of a big list, and I look at this and I go, okay, we're playing a mission where he deploys everything, I deploy everything, and then... He gets to choose who goes first. Or no, the other one.
You choose who goes first.
Yeah, so he was going to be deploying everything. And he has a bajillion guns that will kill Magnus and Mortarion. Because the Vibro Cannons, if they hit you, the next Vibro Cannon to shoot you gets +1 to wound and -1 AP. And then if another one shoots you, it gets +2 to wound.
Oh, so he took Vibro Cannons. He didn't take the Web Spinners?
No, Vibro Cannons. They're really... Really good against Primarchs.
Yeah, when you have 3 of them, also, you really get, because each one hits you, they get buffed up.
Yeah, like so he was wounding, his second one was wounding me on 3s, and his third and subsequent one was wounding all my Primarchs on 2s. You know, just kind of like, okay, fuck. So I identified I've been very vocal on the podcast about how my pregame assessment is not my strongest suit. But this game, I looked and I said, "You know what? Those Primarchs are dead. Like, they're gonna die. Like, there's nothing I can do about it. Like, he has so much anti-tank. Like, I can't kill as many vibro cannons or get into him. And especially since I knew he was going first. Look, I'm gonna lose a Primarch on the first turn, and I'm gonna lose my second Primarch on the second turn. So I need my Zangors to win me this game. And how do I? Because, you know, the reality is, if I can kill all his anti-infantry, then he has a bunch of vibro cannons, which can, you know, they can do damage to my Zangors, but they're not going to wipe the whole squad, especially if I start charging him with my Zangors.
Yeah, they're kind of like las cannons, so they're kind of like high, you know.
Yeah, they're low key, shot, low volume, high strength.
They're bad against hordes, good against.
Yeah. So that's, I kind of identified, look, my Zangors, I need my Zangors to win this game. So I need to actually use Magnus and Mortarion to kill all his anti-infantry power. I need to kill those Guardians with their Shuriken catapults. I need to kill the Swooping Hawks. And I need to kill the Wave Serpents because they have 9 shots with their Shuriken cannons. Yeah. And the Planes have 6 shots each, so they're not even that big a concern against me. I took Recon like a dummy, knowing I was going second. It was probably a stupid choice because I knew I was going to lose a Primarch on turn one. And I knew on my turn one, I'm going to throw the other Primarch into his deployment zone. And we kind of were both, he focused his whole thing on one side. So I just deployed across the line from him, knowing that one of my Primarchs is going to die. The other one's going to go forward and try and kill some of the stuff that's threatening my Zangors and just be a big pain in his ass so that he has to focus all this stuff on killing it on his turn two. So Recon wasn't really the best idea because I didn't have anything to get into the third quarter. I had my 2 quarters and the quarter I was going to go into on his side of the table. But that third quarter that was kind of diagonal from where I deployed, I didn't really have anything to go over there. So I took Recon kind of on autopilot. It was a bad choice. Big Game Hunter was a good choice. I knew I needed to kill the 3 Wave Serpents and at least 1 or 2 Flyers. So that was fine. And I took Butcher's Bill, which turned out to be easy as well. I probably should have taken something like Old School instead of Recon, actually. So, you know, I executed my plan. He killed Magnus first. And then on my... He just barely, too. I had hot saves. I mean, he might have, like... If I had average dice, he probably would have done some significant damage to Mortarion as well. But he shoots into Magnus, and I make, like, 9 out of 10 saves of my first volley. I'm like, oh, shit. But he finally does kill him, just barely. He has to expend some Serpent Shields and shit to get him.
Yeah, because Magnus, without getting his full buffs up, you know, he's
yeah, and I think he thought, vulnerable. And I think he correctly knew that Magnus was the bigger threat because Magnus would have flown up, smited a bunch of shit, directed mortal wounds to his Farseer, his Warlock, or he would have done a lot more damage. And then he would have gone in and killed a vehicle or two himself.
Yeah,
and
then he's a lot harder to kill, yeah.
Yeah, so I think he made the right choice. But so my turn, Mortarion gets thrown into the middle of his army. He shoots his lantern pistol, and you can do this thing where you essentially target something behind a character, and then you draw a line from Mortarion to wherever that model is, and if you draw that line over a character, you can still hit that character, even if it's not the closest model. So I was able to snipe out his Warlock on a bike with that. Mortarion gets some spells off, he goes in, he kills a bunch of Swooping Hawks, he kills a Wave Serpent, he kills that Warlock, he is just in the middle of his army causing a ruckus. And he even, you know, I smite some of the planes that he kind of put on my side of the board with my castle, and I protected them with a dark matter crystal on my unit of Zangors that I had deployed on the board. The other one was deployed in Deep Strike. And the one that I deploy on the board, I move up, I kind of put my characters in with the building on one side of them and the Zangors on the other side of them so nothing can shoot them. And then I go to make my 7-inch charge, I roll Snake Eyes, and I go, fuck. And I didn't get Gaze of Fate off because he denied it, actually. And so then I try to reroll one, and I roll it into a 2. So I have 30 Zangors that are sitting out with their dick in the wind. They are protecting my characters, but, you know, they're going to be subject to 30 Guardians shooting at them and a bunch of Wave Serpents and shit because Mortarion is going to die to those planes and the Vibro Cannons for sure.
The one advantage of those Zangors is if you do use Magnus, then you can use all the buffs. Usually I put them on the Zangors.
Yeah, so I did have...
Plus 1 vulnerable save and -1 to be hit.
Yeah, I did have both buffs on them. So actually it was... He ended up killing like 20 of them in this first turn and Mortarion. and he had charged his waves.
He had that kind of firepower.
Yeah, yeah. He I mean, because he had 30, he doomed his Angors, and he had 30 shuriken catapults shooting into him, plus three wave serpents. And then all the vibro cannons just...
Oh, that's right, all the guardians and stuff.
Messed up. And the Swooping Hawks also did some work on them. But Mortarion went down like a punk. And the Zangors got charged at the end by a Wave Serpent. I was really like... I was pissed because I'm like, oh, fuck. That means I can't, like, charge something else. But I had lost 20 guys. And I said, you know what? Or I had lost, like, I don't know, 17 or something. I said, fuck it. I'll just... You know, I don't even... I think it might have been, like, 15. Because I made a morale. And I lost... like five or six more guys. So maybe I lost something like 12 or 13 or 14 or something like that. Maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought. And at the end, anyways, I was able to take my casualties away from the guys who were fighting the Wave Serpent so that I was no longer locked in combat with that unit, big unit of Zangor. So I had like five or six of them left and kind of like off in a building. Then on my turn two, I was like, okay, Morty's dead. I have my other Zangors coming in and now all my characters are jumping over this building and I have to now put the death blow to his characters. I need to start wrapping some shit in combat. So the 30 other Zangors come in at a deep strike. They charge and kill a Swooping Hawks in a unit of Guardians. The other unit of five charges another unit of Guardians from behind line of sight through a wall, kills them, and they all, both units of Zangors, pile in to a poor Guardian squad that it was in the middle and just tri-point it. And because I tri-pointed one model with the 30-man unit, the five-man unit was able to pile in and touch
Just one dude,
and it doesn't even matter if they don't tri-point him because he can't fall back with that unit, so he can't move any of the guys in it. And then I was able to also pile in one of my Demon Princes into that too, and I was able to charge some flyers on that turn. And I didn't kill any of his flyers, but they're all in like two wounds. His Wave Serpents were all on like one or two wounds, or I had killed one or two of them, something like that. But then turn three, he kind of was in a pickle because he couldn't shoot my Zangors. They're sitting in front of him. They're going to eat those Guardians on his turn, on my turn three, and then proceed to kind of sweep over all of his platforms. So he was able to, you know, he wasn't able to kill anything that turn because his planes were all hitting me on sixes because they were all ballistic skill four, minus one because they're moving and shooting a heavy weapon, and then some of my stuff was minus one to hit or something like that. I don't recall the particularities, but he... didn't kill anything, and so on the end of his turn three, he didn't even get a kill, and you know, my turn three ended with us kind of just calling the game at that point, and because we ran out of time, he was at like 3 minutes left, and this kind of goes to some tournament etiquette stuff. I had like 7 minutes left, and I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna kind of just take my time with my turn and get myself under 5 minutes, because I knew if that the game ended then, I'd be winning 19-17. And so I kind of just ran the clock down, said, okay, I'm done with my turn. We're not going to start a new battle round. And although that's not the best taste in your mouth, it is the tournament rules. And, you know, it's kind of go on a tangent. I spoke to some of the other guys on TFG Radio about this, about what they feel, whether that's a code of conduct violation, because I was of the opinion that it is. It's very like gamey and, you know, not not in the spirit of the game. But apparently they take the position that it is in the spirit. It's in the rules. It's part of the rules of the chess clock. And you are not violating the code of conduct by choosing to exercise your right under those rules. So.
Yeah, it's also one thing if you have 30 minutes left. It's another thing if you have 7 minutes left.
Even if you have 30 minutes left, I mean, I guess I kind of get their point. Like, it's hard to police, it's hard to judge when someone's doing it, you know, maliciously or whatnot.
I guess it is. It's your time. If your opponent squandered his time, well, that's
yeah, tough if you're on if him. Your opponent has less than 5 minutes and you have over 30 and you're only on turn three, that means
that's his fault. Yeah, and he should have played faster, and so yeah, exactly. He deserves everything he gets.
Yeah, so that just one thing on the clock, you know, just make sure you are cognizant of your opponent's time as well. And if when you're getting down to 10 minutes of your own time, you want to make sure that you can not be under five when they're over five.
Yeah, it's interesting what he did, though. I can see what you're saying, though. He it looks like he committed his Guardians trying to kill your Zangors, but you have to be very careful with units that don't fly in the middle of an assault army, because you can just get held up and everybody piles in and everybody's standing around going, what do we do now?
I mean, I kind of think he didn't really have a choice, because he had to kill Mortarion. If he didn't commit his Guardians, my Zangors would have just kind of swept over him. One thing, actually, what he could have done would just be empty out his
wave serpents, push his wave serpents out to scream me out, and then charge me with his wave serpents, and then keep all of his guardians kind of back, you know, 20 inches away from that, so that when I come in, I have to charge the Zangors into the wave serpents, and then he can kind of, I have to slowly walk toward him instead of just being able to charge him and wrap him in one turn. So that might have been something he could have done differently, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah, that's interesting. So
let's talk about our last topic.
Well, we don't really have much of a last topic. We're just everybody's just sitting and waiting for the FAQ to come out, because I remember back in the day it used to be, oh, September FAQ, and everybody go online, when's the FAQ coming out? It's September, where is it? Now everybody's like, it's coming out the last day of the month. So
yeah.
So by the time you hear this, it should be out either Friday probably or Monday. So it's coming up pretty quick. So it'll be interesting to see what comes up. We don't do wish listing because everybody's always wrong. Everybody's like, oh, I want this. Like, and we can never get that. So it's just a futile effort. So
yeah, one of the things I'm actually interested in is what they're going to change this time, because other than like maybe addressing flyer spam again, I don't think they personally need to, but I could see them taking another crack at it because, well, you know, they like piling on the nerfs. But I don't really see a whole lot of things that they need to change in the meta that are like dominating the meta. They already changed Caladius grab tanks and the, you know, with the beta custodes rule. So I mean, I don't really know what they're gonna do.
The Orion flyer or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll change the Gene Stealer cult blip strategy, so you can't come in on turn six, whatever. Because Nova did that. I think that's a pretty clear signal to the rest of us that that's what they're gonna do. But maybe not. Who knows, right? So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that FAQ. I don't think it's going to shake up the meta as much as last year or...
I don't think it is either. I think chapter approve is what everybody looks to for kind of wholesale changes, because that's where they manipulate the points around. And you can do a lot with points because we saw, you know, Tau and Necrons were struggling last year. And they seem like they're in a much better place this year after they had the points changes. And then also the Custodes, too, had a bunch of their points changed around too. So we'll see. Chapter approved in December is going to be the big one, but I don't really expect, I think we're just going to get clarifications rather than actual, you know, nerfs or changes.
Yeah, I think that's probably an accurate prediction, but we'll see. We'll see what the new Space Marine meta is going to do. Well, I think their first big...
Our new Necron, our new Iron Hand Overlords.
Yeah, I think SoCal Open is going to be the first, you know...
Really coming up.
Well, I guess Legend GT had a ton of Space Marines at it. You know?
Yeah, but they had Ultramarines and I guess the White Scars out, and they did fairly well, but, you know, it was so new then, people didn't have much practice with it or against it, and now everybody's painting up like crazy, because I know, you know, people around here are painting up Marines like crazy and switching armies, so... We're just going to start seeing, especially since it seemed like they're really powerful, and nothing attracts players like power creep, so...
Oh, and it is fucking real power creep, man. It's nuts.
I know, so that's why I'm thinking about going pure Harlequins, just because I just want to fit as many Skyweavers as possible, because I feel like, I don't know, is anybody going to go Infantry Horde? I guess... Man, but if I go pure Harlequins, I'll really struggle with White Scars. White Scars will just wreck my world, because they don't have any vehicles, and they're all toughness 5, and I'm like toughness 4, so I might have to. Maybe I'll just keep the list I'm going at right now.
Yes, keep your list. Don't go pure.
No, pure Harlequins, man. How am I going to win best Harlequin faction without taking it to tournaments?
You are a mad person.
All right, sure. And that's will take us to another end of podcast here. It's time to blow this popsicle stand. Jeff, take us out.
Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Thank you very much. And see you guys, talk to you guys in 2 weeks. Bye now.